Read me romance. Read, read me romance. Read me romance. Read, read me romance.
You could take a look in a book, that's fine. Or you could sit back, relax, and unwind and
read me romance. Read, read me romance.
Hello, and welcome to Read Me Romance.
Lady listeners.
Hey, lady listeners. We got to say it first this week. What the shit? Everything's off. Let's stop this.
Stop,
go back,
record
it again.
Yes. Hey, lady listeners. It's Tessa Bailey and Leah and Mel, also known as Alexa Riley. We're here for...
What's up?
Yeah. We're here for some fun. We're here for actually Naima Simone Week, which we're really excited about. Her book is called Grading Curves, and it takes place, in the beginning at least, in a tattoo parlor. It's an older woman, younger man.
Which we haven't had, have we?
I don't know. No. I don't think so.
Awesome. I can't recall now.
I love when we get something different.
And it's also teacher-student. But I'm not going to tell you too much about it. I'm pretty sure that's implied in the blurb and the title. But yeah, I don't want to give too much away. But I read this last night, and I'm not gonna lie. I was horny in the beginning of the right off the bat.
You're like, I was in this to win this. Yeah. From day one.
The hero shows up on the page, kind of like I said in Aurora Rose Reynolds' book. Like, he shows up and like. He's so present immediately on the page. Like, his voice rumbles, and he says, I'll take her. Like, they're in the tattoo parlor. And it's just like, ooh, okay. And then he is a dirty talker. Like, he's tattooing this lady. They have a connection, and oh my God, it's really, really good. So I'm excited to share this one. And I've known Naima Simone for a pretty long time, because we both came up through the Entangled ranks, and I've known her for a while. Entangled's a publishing company, for those of you who don't know. And I finally got to meet her at Shameless last year, and her sister, and they were so funny.
Oh, for the first time in person.
Yeah.
Did you ask her to be on the podcast when you were there?
I think I'd asked her beforehand, because I gave her a bunch of, we'd sent her a bunch of Read Me Romance stuff to put on her table, mm-hmm. or we gave it to her there. Anyways, they were just, she's a delight. She's really, really funny. This book is funny. You're going to be laughing through it. And anyways, we'll chat for a while. And then at the end of the episode, I'll give you some more Naima Simone recommendations, because you're going to want them after this chapter. It's a real good chapter.
It's a real good chapter.
Yeah. Come back to me at the end. You'll be in much the same situation I was in last night.
I can't wait.
So, Leah, your dog is at boot camp. Talk to me.
Oh, yeah. That's what we were... So, somebody... For those of you who didn't catch it last week, when we were doing Aurora Rose, Mel said that my dog's in the pantry. For whatever reason, when we were recording a few weeks back, I had to put her in our pantry, which is very large. But I had to put her in her kennel inside of that, because she was barking so loud.
You act like hanging out in the pantry is a bad thing. No. Out in the pantry all day.
There's so many snacks in
there. Is there Nutter Butters?
Oh my God. Right. Oh shit. So last night we had Girl Scouts. I'm a troop I lead the brownies in our Girl Scout troop. And so I was a snack mom last night, and I brought snacks for everybody, because there's normally about 30 or so kids and adults. Well, I get there and I realize that like half the troop is gone. And so I was like, fuck, I got to take all this shit home. So in my pantry right now, we've got all those Great Little Debbie, like, Easter cakes, where they're in the shape of, like, butterflies and eggs, and they have, like, they're, like, little cakes with cream in the middle, and I've got, like, fudge rounds and Star Crunch and oatmeal pies. I was like, I can't just have these in my house.
I could not keep those in my house. No. I have them in my house yesterday, and I ate three.
No,
like, just sitting there.
It's embarrassing how many of those are going to be gone before we leave. My dog's in boot camp because, I mean, she's a puppy, but she also is, she's a lab, and we got her from a breeder, and because we've rescued dogs and stuff before, but just with having little kids, we really were looking for a dog with a good temperament, and I'm really busy. I don't have time for this shit. So our dog, like, she's really bad about jumping, barks a lot. Like, she's really vocal. That's how she talks to us. My sister has a golden doodle, which is like a golden retriever and a poodle. But he's like 75% poodle. And they took him to this thing. It's called off-leash training. And it's a national, like, training program you can send your dog to. And Aurora Rose actually recently sent her dog to it. And so we were texting back and forth, and I was like, you know, I know my sister's experience. It was really good. Tell me about yours. Like, I want to try to crowdsource this. Like, tell me what you think. And she's like, I'm really excited. You know, Sophie comes home tomorrow. And she texts me the day the dog got back. And she's like, this is a completely different dog. She was like, she was like, you know, it's really difficult, especially with little ones, you know, with dogs that are, you know, that have a poodle in them. They're really bouncy and handsy and stuff, you know. But she said that basically the off-leash training is they train them to be off-leash, like by your side, listening to commands. You know, you can walk down the sidewalk. You can go downtown. They'll sit in a crowd. They won't move. They take them to stores and make them sit in the middle of the store while you go around the aisles and stuff and come back to them. So, like, that's how they're trained to be like that. And then, so my sister got an extra certification for her dog to do therapy. He's a therapy dog, as in she can take him to old people's homes and like they can like pet the dog and stuff. Basically, he's very well behaved, so that anybody can pet him and give him attention and he won't react. So that was something that we were really excited about with our dog. You know, like I said, she's really jumpy, she's really excited, and you know, she's about 6 months old. So, you know, I was worried that she's going to be too young. But they said that they start the training at 5 months. And they said that the training we did, it's a lifetime guarantee. So after, you know, if it's been a year or so and she's starting to break away from the training, or she's, you know, got, you know, doesn't really want to listen as much, you can send her back and they do it again. It kind of worked out for us when we're going on our trip to have the dog. We were going to have to board her no matter what. So this was just kind of a great alternative. We're like, not only will we, you know, be able to have someone look out for her while we're gone, you know, have somebody responsible to be with her, and she's not just in a kennel all day, she's going to get this really awesome training too. So I'm super excited. So shout out to Off Leash Training in Greenville, South Carolina. The chick, her name's Collins, and I was like, I'm definitely going to use that name.
Oh my God, I love that name.
I know. Like, she was like, hi, I'm Collins. I was like, shut the fuck up.
Okay, can we both use it? Like,
no, no, it's ours. No, we're gonna steal all your ideas.
Wait, can I use it like a year after you use it?
Yes.
Okay, fine.
Okay, maybe. Okay. We have to shit. We're gonna
definitely. Use I think a, it would be one of my hair.
I think
names.
It would be fun. We should come up. You know, I always say you can write a story and it goes two different ways. We
Let's
should
do it.
Write a Colin heroine and say what the idea is gonna be, and
yes.
then see how we see. Tell
her name's
story.
Collins. She's a dog trainer.
Well, Collins sounds like all I'm seeing is Reese Witherspoon's character in Legally Blonde.
Ooh.
Like, I just see super type A, like, just, like, what, it's, like, it's hard? Like, that?
Yeah. Well, and I feel like that's how she's gonna be when I meet her. I don't know what she looks like, but in my mind, she's, like, really, like, fit, and she's got these dogs, and they're listening
she's
to
blonde,
her.
She's blonde, she's got, like, a bob, and she's wearing a polo shirt. Yeah.
Absolutely. And she's in charge.
She's in.
Like, I feel like she's probably the alpha. So I'm excited to
meet
her.
Got a clipboard.
And then the hero shows up.
Oh.
And fucking knocks her right off kilter.
Yep. I love it.
Yeah. Maybe he's a dog shifter.
So, yeah. Shout out to Collins. I'm going to use your name.
He's like, he's a dog shifter. He's like, you can train me anytime you want, baby.
I used to work with a girl back in the day. Her name was Pierce, and it was like a family name, like P-E-A-R-C-E. And I always thought that was the coolest fucking name ever. Pierce.
I always wanted to be Brooke. I wanted my name to be Brooke.
I always thought my dad had a cool name.
He does. It's Corbett. It's
but our last name is King. So when people glance down to look at it, it looks like Cobra King.
Cobra King. Yes. I can
that
see that.
Rad.
Sure. That is cool.
Are there snake shifters?
No. No.
I'm sure.
Okay, well, if you ever had a chance to use your dad's name in a book, that's what it would have to be.
No, right? Your mom has a cool name too, Mel. This Danny, yes. D-A-N-I. Yeah. She's got
D-A-N-I-E.
A really cool
name. D-A-N-I-E. I had the parents with the weirdest names growing up.
Danny and Corba. Like, I like boys' names for girls. At one point, we named a heroine James. And I was like, I know Mel is probably rolling her eyes at this, but all I could think of was James King, like the, you know, the model slash actor.
Jamie
like,
King, yeah. Thought, oh, is it James, you're right, yeah.
James, yeah. I just thought it was a cool name, James, for a girl. I just always thought that was really pretty, but I like boy names like that.
Okay, you guys, since this book has a younger man, older woman theme, I want your best recommendations. Do you have any?
For older woman?
Older woman, younger man books.
I think I've only read one that did that. Oh, we have one there coming out! What is it? Too many.
Oh,
too.
Yeah,
too many. Too many. She's like she's like 2 or 3 years older than them. It's not by much. And they're still in their 20s, but still.
You guys.
But it's called, it's the spinoff of Too Hard. So, yeah. Okay. But I think I've only read one, and I talked.
Wait, have
about
you read Water for Elephants?
Yes.
Okay, that's one.
Oh,
remember the young boy?
Do you know that was a NaNoWriMo book? I didn't know that until like somebody told me like a year ago.
I had no idea.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, NaNoWriMo is it's the month of November. It's the National Writers Month, and so you start the 1st of November. You start and you make a pledge on how many words you're going to write a day, and no, you just kind of hold each other accountable.
You're trying to write a book in a month, basically.
Yeah, and so Water for, you know, there's been a couple of really really good books that have come from it. Water for Elephants was a NaNoWriMo.
I didn't know that.
And so, yeah, I always thought that was a really cool fun fact. What if I'm wrong and I just said all that? But I'm fairly certain I think it said it like in the notes about the book or whatever. Yeah.
It's by Sarah Dessen, right? Dessen, I think.
It's been so long since I've read it.
I'll have to just
I like that sex scene in the book. I wish it would have been a little bit longer.
Was Robert Pattinson was in the movie, right? With Reese, was it Reese Witherspoon? I'm just butchering this. Reese Witherspoon and Robert Pattinson?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, my recommendation is The Siren by Tiffany Rise.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a writer and her editor. It's the first book in the original Sinners series, and this is not a series for the faint of heart. So
no, it's I really like that one.
What's it called?
The Siren.
The Siren. It's amazing, that one, but it's not for everybody. Like, I guess.
I don't know. Yeah. I had a difficult time reading it. Number one, when I first read it, she dedicates it to, I don't want to say she dedicates it, but.
Let's all remember that we're in a book bundle together.
An incredible, I think she's one of the best writers in romance for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's really, but it's like you say, this book is not, it's number one, it's not a standalone. And once you read it, you're all of a sudden, you've got like this whole world has been built. And there's so many questions that was left unanswered in the end of the first one that I was like, I don't know if I can keep going in this. Like I tried to read the second one and I knew it was going to be so involved that I didn't want to get into it. Like for whatever reason, I was just like, there's so much happening because in the first book she's with like with her editor, but then there's this other guy that like was her master or whatever for, you know, and it's this whole thing, but it's really, really fucking well written. Like you say, like she's an incredible writer, but the story itself, like I just felt overwhelmed. Like and that's why I write like 20,000 word short romances, because I get so easily overwhelmed by a story.
It's like an emotionally taxing, but like, I don't know how to describe it. The series is going to, it sucks you in. You're very mm-hmm. involved. It's like, you're mm-hmm. going to have a book hangover. You're going to be like heart sick and you just have to, if you want to get on board for something like that, this is the best thing you can do is pick this series up. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, like, I don't know how to describe it except that it's going to grab you really hard. And, you know,
there's
it's
so,
not safe.
It's
I wouldn't say it's BDSM and it's BDSM. Mm-hmm. That's like, you know, on the hardcore, I guess, would you would call it. It's not BDSM
hardcore.
Light at all.
No. So. It's not diet.
It's not diet.
Like, it's an emotional roller coaster. Like, it's all the feels. Like, when I got finished with the first one, I was, like yearning, sad, angry, like, in love. Like, it was all these emotions were on the surface because she is such an incredible writer. But I would liken it to, did you ever read The Thief by Taryn Fisher? Did you ever read that series? It ripped me in half. Like, it's, like, the first one is called, oh, shit, I can see the cover.
Are you thinking of Mudvayne?
It's like, it's The Confession. What is it? Not the, this, it's the Dirty Red. I'll have to think on it again. It's not like The Confession, but it's like the, something like that. But anyway, it's about, like, this girl who has amnesia. And she, like, meets this guy, and they fall in love. And it's like, but she's fallen in love with him before. But, like,
did he doesn't tell her that?
Yeah. Like, it's gut-wrenching. Or, no, sorry, the guy has amnesia, and then they fall in love again. But it's, like, it's just really hard, because your emotions are just so entangled up in it, and it's not necessarily, like, even the same thing with Tiffany Reese, it's not necessarily a love story for most of the book, you know, but there is love in it. But, you know, there's so many people who rave about this, like our friend Yahira, who blogs for After Dark Book Lovers. That's her favorite book ever written.
Yeah, the people who love this series love it. like, I mean, more they're than their so child. Loyal.
Well, I was going to say, and, like, Tiffany does that, what is it, the Sinner Sunday she did with, when we were at Shameless? Like, it's sold out.
Unholy Day.
Yeah, that's it. And it's the people just are obsessed with this
and it's so funny because then I was on a panel with her and she was her personality is nothing like I was expecting. Like, she's real down home, like,
yeah, she's really nice.
After writing this like devastating literature, she's like down home, and she's like just kind of homey and just sweet.
Well, she does like short Harlequin books too.
She does, yeah.
Like, which is, yeah, which surprises me because, like, she writes this intense series that is just so emotionally gripping, and then just to write like a little lighthearted Harlequin book, you know, like, it's just funny.
Versatile.
To me to be able to do it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then the
Opportunist. That's it. The Opportunist, the Taryn Fisher.
The
book.
Opportunist.
That's the one. Yeah. That's another emotional wrecking ball. Like, if, I mean, some people really like angst. Some people want to read a book and feel something on it. You know, I mean, those are, I think if you're looking to get deep into a BDSM story, read The Siren. Like, that, go for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and just don't send us your complaints or your letters when you're like, yeah, when you're like
you've got a
book hangover
shower.
And you're like, yeah,
ah, like,
what'd you do this to me?
Yeah.
Mel, did you think of any, or should I catch you on the next on the teacher student recs?
No, I was gonna give the Liberating Lacey one.
Oh yeah, talk oh, about yeah. that.
It's real popular. It's an older one. It's about a woman who's newly divorced, and she goes out. She's tired of having missionary sex, and she goes out and she meets a young guy, and they hook it up. And it's only supposed to be a one night stand, and he's kind of like, "No, this is gonna keep going."
Okay. So that's Liberating Lacey. Did you say who it was by?
Annie Colehan, I think it is. It's been a long
Anne Calhoun. Is it Anne Calhoun?
I'll have to pull it back up.
Hold on, I have Amazon open. Liberating Lacey.
We're never prepared. I just texted you.
Oh,
Anne Calhoun. Yeah.
Anne Calhoun.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was wildly popular like 7-8 years ago. I think it's been recovered and come back out, but you guys should check it out.
Check it out, guys.
I think I've recommended the one before that we talked about was Cherise Sinclair. Again, it was the BDSM one where the woman is older and she has two older sons. And that's in the Shadowland series, but I can't remember which book it is in that, but I'm sure it says, but like, she was an older woman.
Okay. So the other theme in this book is teacher student. So I know you guys probably have a few of those recommendations because that's kind of your jam.
Yeah. Jenica Snow just released one that was really good. Professor. It's really sweet and dirty, and he is like obsessed with her.
All right.
So, and that's on Kindle Unlimited.
I will say this book that we're playing this week by Naomi Simone, Grading Curves, is kind of a role reversal, like where the professor is the woman. And the student is the guy that gives her the tattoo in the first chapter and licks her pussy. I mean, I don't want to spoil it, but that's what you're in for today, and it's good stuff. Okay, so we were going to talk about Veiled Innocence by Ella Frank.
Yeah, that one's always my number one go-to, because that one's just so filthy. But also, like, I like it because the professor tells her no. That's the reason I like it. He's not trying to seduce her. He's not trying to trick her. She's the one that's like, oh, this shit's going to happen. And he's like, we can't do this. You can't stop. No. Oh, God, stop. Like, that kind of thing. So, yeah, that's really good. I like that one.
That turns me on, which probably mm-hmm. it probably shouldn't. But the first movie I ever watched that had a sex scene in it was Disclosure. With Michael Douglas and
oh fuck,
you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
And that's
like 80s.
She tries to seduce him, and he says no like over and over again.
Uh-huh.
And then she finally like succeeds. But just that, like, you know, he says no until he can't anymore. Like, mm-hmm. not like because she drugs him or does
that's
something
with,
awful, just because he can't resist. You know, like.
Demi Moore. I remember in that movie, there's a point where, like, Demi Moore, they had the recording of it.
That's right.
Having sex. And they were like, 67 times he says no, blah, 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 or whatever. And, but anyways, there's a part in the movie where Demi Moore, she's the kind of the bad guy, and she comes up to his wife and was like, did you know about this and this and this? And the wife's like, of course I did. We share everything. And, like, grabs her husband's hand and walks away. And as they're walking away, the wife's like, you're going to tell me everything in the car, or whatever it is. Like, she's like, but I always liked that scene because the wife, like, backed up her husband without even really knowing.
Yeah.
Because that's how much she trusted him. That was like, there's nothing, like, between this, or, you know, there's nothing you can do to hurt us or whatever, like, we're a team. And then she goes out and she's like, okay, what the fuck was that? You know, like, I just always like that part of
always,
it.
And yeah. Obviously in real life, no means no.
I know. If you, this is fantasy, it's a fantasy. God damn it.
Yeah, okay.
If you guys want to get Beauty and the Beast and a teacher student one, Sky Warren has one that's my favorite book of hers.
Ooh.
What is it?
It's like Beauty and the Beast. It was like a part. There was like four parts, but it's been bundled because it's been years ago.
Yeah.
So it's going to be Beauty and Beast something. Loving the Beast, I think, is what it is when it's all bundled together.
Mm-hmm.
But for Sky Warren, yeah, just type in Beast with Sky Warren.
Go get that one. Do you remember, oh shit, Mel, what was the name of those fucking books we read back in the day? The three of them, was it the Honor series? Do you remember that? Because it was a student-teacher romance, and you get the girl's book, and then the second book is from the guy's perspective, and all of a sudden, you're like, oh, shit.
I don't think it was finished.
Was it? Did she never finish it?
I don't think it ever finished.
This has probably been 6-7 years ago. Like, it's been a long time, but it's like, I think it was called the Honor series. You'll have to look it up.
Charlotte Stein has a book called The Professor. Have you guys read that?
No.
Okay. I read it.
Charlotte Stein.
I did read it. She, the student, the girl writes like erotic fantasies and he finds one for a professor.
Stop it.
Yeah. Fuck hot. Like, it's so hot. I'm looking at it here. It's got like 32 reviews. Like, it's crazy to me that nobody reads Charlotte Stein. What the fuck?
Yeah. True story.
It drives me crazy. You know what though?
She's not like... But you don't really see her stuff everywhere either.
I know.
Though,
you know, know what? Like, I just like wonder if it's because she's European and they hate self-promoting.
Yeah. Or like she's just been around so long that they're like, if you don't know her, just forget it. You know? Like,
it's so crazy to me that, but I feel like she does limit her promotions to Twitter, which is.
Well, this is like Evangelina Anderson. You know, we talked about where it's like, let's bring in a new crop of readers to these. So check out Charlotte Stein. If you have not heard of her or read her before, get on it.
Like, yeah, start with Sheltered, which I think we recommended last week.
Yes,
but also
we did.
I mean, you could really pick up any of them. Never Sweeter is really great. Mm-hmm. Just do yourself a favor and then just tell her to be on the podcast.
Yeah, just pass that along to her.
Pass that along.
Tell her you heard her from Read Me Romance. That's how you heard about her.
I also have a teacher student book called Need Me if anybody wants to read it.
Nobody does.
Yeah, never mind. Just forget I said anything.
What? Hey, do you have Alexa Riley's on there? We have Coach's student Coach. Teacher.
And he's a thick man.
Hey, he's all thick and hairy. Let's go back to our book and how everybody wants to read that. No, what was the one you were talking about recently with Sky Warren? The guy's a composer. He's kind of like, and she's
Overture.
Underage or something. Overture.
Yeah.
That was the one.
Overture
by
Sky Warren. It's out now. And I know there's going to be, I think there's going to be more books in the series.
Okay.
But he's like a badass, like he owns like a military, like he has like a military compound with all these like, I want to call them like, not mercenaries. I don't think that's the word, but they're like. Contractors, like they're contracted
okay, like
out.
Contract killers.
Yeah, I don't know if killer is the right word.
That's mercenaries.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mercenaries is the right word.
So that's what they are, but there's also like so then there's this young girl who's his ward who lives with him, and she's a prodigy. She's a prodigy.
No,
and the tension. Oh my god! And he walks in on her masturbating and calling out his name, and it's like, oh, the tension between them is just really, really good. And she's a fantastic writer. I mean, you can't go wrong with Sky Warren, really. So
of course,
check out.
But I thought about that when you were talking about the student. I was trying to think if there was another one though. I feel like there's another one that I can't remember now. I'm gonna have to look up that Honor series because I don't know what.
Yeah, it's four books in it. I think it's been a long time, but for some reason I remember reading it and the whole thing. And for some reason I think it's not finished. Like you're left like. Not sure, and there hasn't been any more.
Have you guys ever had a crush on one of your teachers?
I got sexually harassed by one.
Really?
Yeah.
In high school or college?
College, yeah. And I have a feeling like he just like kept testing to see which girl would go for it. Like he just seemed like that. Like he was married, And he was like, he was a math professor, and he would just make weird comments sometimes that were like overtly like gratuitous. And then sometimes he would just make comments. Like one day he was like, oh gosh, you look really nice. Like, where are you going? You know, like it was just weird comments like that. And I would just, I think it made me really uncomfortable. And one day I was like, yeah, I'm just all lacy today, because I had like a lace top on or something. He was like, oh, everywhere? You know, it was like those follow-up questions that made me like really uncomfortable, where I was like, what? And I didn't really know what to do. And like nothing ever happened, but I just thought like, I feel like this was just stepping stones to see where this is going to go.
Did you call him out on it, or were you just like,
I felt really small, yeah. Even for as big of a personality as I have, like when I get in those situations, I panic, yeah. You know, and he was a department head too. So like, who could have told on him, you know? And so like that really, it really sucked, but he's not a teacher there anymore. I looked it up like a couple years later, 'cause I looked back on it, like I should have reported him, or I should have like said something, because I know I was not the only one he could have done this to.
It's crazy. 'Cause like, you think super strong, and like that you would just get in someone's face, and then it happens to you, and you're like I remember my daughter's pediatrician put his hand on me twice, like on my bare skin. I'd gone in. Ooh. This was like a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago. She had a swimmer's ear or something like that. And I went into the pediatrician, and we were like in between insurance. I was switching her insurance. I'm not sure what was going on, but he gave me the medicine for free. Like they had free samples. It was almost like he felt like he had permission to put his hand on my, it was like I had a sundress on. He put his hand on my bare back twice. I moved away the first time. He came back and did it again. He rubbed his hand on my bare back, and I froze.
Oh. Yeah, like, what do you do?
I thought I was the kind of person who would just, like, I would, like, clock that motherfucker.
Yeah,
and
no, right?
I like, felt, like, 2 inches tall, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to make a scene in front of my kid and scare her.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I was like, maybe I'm misinterpreting. Maybe he's just a, you know, like, he doesn't know boundaries. But no, he's if you reach the age of 30, let alone 60, and you don't know not to put your hand on a strange woman, well then,
yeah. Or as a fucking doctor, are you not trained in bedside manner?
Like, yeah,
what the, yeah,
anyways, like
keep your hands to yourself. That's weird.
It is weird.
But I just hate that, like, I didn't have a better reaction at the time, and I'm sure you felt the same way too, like, to look back on it. But I did look and see that he wasn't a teacher there, and I'm like, I bet you he got his ass in trouble, like, you know, he went too far with somebody, and for whatever reason, he's not there.
So. Yeah, somebody, you know, made the email, or a couple of people.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we are going to play, should we leave it on that note? Yeah.
Well, no, I was going to say, are we reading each other's stuff?
Oh, why don't we read an email from a listener about a wedding disaster?
Well, I was going to say, we have each other's, like...
We're going to do that on Friday. We're going to read... Okay. So on Friday of this week, we're going to read dirty scenes from each other. So I'm going to read a dirty scene from Trailer Park Virgin. And they're going to read... and they're going to read a scene from one of my books. So, okay. So let me read this listener email that's kind of long, but this has to be the worst fucking wedding of all time.
Yes. Give it to me.
She says her name is Mary Beth, and I can say it. So Mary Beth, Jesus Christ. This is kind of long.
Okay, go for
it. Hi, Tessa, Leah, and Mel. Love the show to bits, and I listen every day. I live for Mondays and Fridays when you all are all together. I adore Leah's laugh. Tessa is so quick-witted, and Mel has the best dad stories. Anyway, here's my wedding disaster. Our wedding was put together on a shoestring budget. I think the most expensive part was the church rental. The ceremony was set for early afternoon because the pastor had another appointment right after the wedding, so everything was really rushed. I was told not to wash my hair for 2 days because it would style better. Unfortunately, because it's super thin, the dry shampoo caked, and it looked like I was wearing a George Washington wig.
Stop.
Then a friend insisted she do my makeup, and, well, no. It was not so great. Like, metallic eyeshadow, not great, and bright pink lips. By the time I look like a clown from the Revolutionary War.
Then my
maid of honor and my soon-to-be husband got into a huge fight, like a screaming fight. The church we rent, she didn't give us much information on that. The church we rented had a strict no alcohol policy, and my parents-in-law are alcoholics, so they decided to circumvent this policy.
There's a question mark on the alcohol.
They decided to circumvent this policy by drinking in the parking lot. Picture it, my future family-in-law, father, mother, brother, all crowded around a Buick bringing liquor from the trunk. I think it was dubbed the traveling bar. They were the only ones in the parking lot. We got the ceremony off without any major catastrophes, but then it was time for the reception. We turn, and our pastor announces us, and there's silence. We were awkwardly waiting for the music, but the person who was responsible for pressing play was sitting there waiting, watching us, and not realizing it was time for the song to start for us to walk back down the aisle. After the most mortifying 60 seconds of my life, our pastor announces us again and starts to get the applause going. But we didn't rehearse it this way, so my husband and I had no idea what to do. We just kind of stood there.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Eventually, the pastor pushes us down the aisle, and by the time we hit the baptismal, the music starts playing. At the end. Okay. We proceed to have an uncomfortable first dance, no DJ, so we just started dancing, and no one had any idea what the hell was happening. The pastor kind of pushed everyone out of the church about after an hour because he had another appointment, and my husband and I got to our dinner reception at our house. This was just for the wedding party and family. It was a barbecue. My brother said he would cook, but at the last minute decided that he would rather watch the baseball game. Anyway, there's my husband in his suit cooking burgers and hot dogs for our reception. I go to take off my makeup with a makeup remover cloth and start to have an allergic reaction. So I'm in the house trying to get my eyes open again. Then when I'm gone, I guess my drunk mother-in-law tripped over a tree root and fell. On her way down, she ripped the biggest fart on earth, and everyone saw, heard, and smelled up at me, which may have been a good thing. But this wasn't over yet. It had been kind of a humid day, but we checked the weather report and it was just supposed to get cloudy in the afternoon. Nope. As we were sitting outside, suddenly the wind picks up and the clouds start rolling in fast. We were trying to collect all the stuff from outside and tried to avoid getting impaled by branches or pelted by flying pine cones. Like at one point, I saw my brother-in-law get hit in the back of the head. He fell like he'd been shot and yelled, "Save yourself." We made it into the house at the first strike of lightning. But then there was another and another, and then the torrential downpour came. I think they called it a once-in-a-100-year storm.
Holy shit!
The freeway caught fire. Man, it was crazy.
What?
Okay, almost over. The storm eventually passed, and we were able to get to our hotel for the wedding night. I had let my husband handle this part, and of course, he went to his mother for some direction. They chose this place that was on a river, but also featured theme rooms. After much deliberation, he and his mother chose the Laura Ashley suite with the hot tub in the room. The room looked like a pink doily exploded in there, and true to the advertisement, it had a full-size hot tub with white twinkle lights and fake ivy surrounding it right in the middle of the room.
Oh, God.
This is the moment I grabbed the bottle I packed, popped it open, and just started chugging. I knew at some point we ended up sitting outside our room in plastic lawn chairs, passing a bottle of Boone's Farms back and forth in silence, processing our wedding PTSD.
Oh my God, yeah. You poor sweet darling.
I can honestly say I love this man more today than the day I married him. He's an incredible and amazing husband and has supported me in so many ways. And I am continually awed by his strength. I can thank you ladies enough for the show. Oh, I can't thank you ladies enough for the show. It has been life-changing for me and makes it feel not so bad. It makes me feel not so alone in this world. Same goes for the Facebook group. It's one of the few places I feel like I truly belong. Because of this show, I've made some awesome friends and I no longer feel so lonely. Much love, Mary Beth.
Oh, I love it. I love love.
That is a wedding, though, for the ages right there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a horrific wedding, but I'm glad she ended it on a note with that at least she has us to console her.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to go ahead and play the first installment of Grading Curves by Naima Simone, and we'll talk to you guys on the other side. Enjoy.
See you then.
Chapter 1. Nikki. It's a tattoo shop. Not the Hellmouth or the Bog of Eternal Stench. Or a buy one, get one sale at Forever 21. Not that I actually shop at Forever 21 because, one, I left that age behind 9 years ago. And two, I left the ass needed to fit into those clothes about 15 years ago and 4 dress sizes ago. still, with two nieces, I know from personal experience, a sale there is a special kind of torture. And 90s TV shows, 80s movies, and skinny girl shopping habits aside, I'm stalling. Woman, get your ass in there, I mutter to myself. Inhaling a deep breath, I grab the handle on the front door to the tattoo shop and yank it open. Bells jingle above the doorway, loud enough to be heard over the rap music blasting from the speakers. All heads turn my way. All two of them. A tall, bearded man whose wide shoulders are testing the limits of his white t-shirt, and a young, gorgeous woman, almost as tall as the guy, with half her head shaved and the rest of the thick, long mass flowing over one shoulder. Both are covered in tattoos. I swallow, and the voice in my head that sounds suspiciously close to my mother's screams, "Bitch, you crazy?" Without my permission, my feet take a step back toward the door, and the safe, boring world I'd meticulously planned for myself, which directly contradicts me being up here in a tattoo shop ready to permanently mark my body in places that might not be as tight and elastic in 10 years. For some people, this probably isn't their definition of wild, but for me, with my fear of needles, it's the equivalent of streaking through Kensington Palace brandishing a "Harry, marry me" poster. I might have a thing for the red-headed royal. "You lost?" Lumberjack asks. He shoves off the front desk that he was leaning on and moves toward me. "If you're looking for the cafe that was here, it moved to the other side of town over a year ago." Okay, I know what he's seeing. Older black woman, older than him anyway. Simple, almost conservative clothing and jewelry. So I get his question. Doesn't mean I'm still not offended. But with terror crawling through my veins like an army of ants headed to Armageddon, my throat is too dry to deliver a verbal smackdown. "No," I blurt before he can give me instructions to said cafe while ushering me out of the shop. He halts, frowning at my most likely too loud and vehement protest. "I mean, no. I'm here for a tattoo. Please." I tack on since he and the supermodel only stare at me more.
"Where? Beneath the cardigan?"
He nods toward my pale blue sweater that's opened over a white tank top. Okay, that was just snippy and uncalled for. My cardigan was cute as hell and 50% off at New York and Company. "Forget him," the supermodel interjects with a wave in his direction. "I'm sorry, but we're about to close. Can you come back tomorrow? Or, if you know what artist you'd like, we can set up an appointment."
"I can take her."
A new voice. A dark rumble of a voice like a smooth scotch on extra hard rocks. Enters the conversation. And the three of us turn in the direction of it. Relief flows through me that my mission hasn't met an untimely end. "Thank you. I think I'm hallucinating, because no way on God's green earth can you exist outside of an LSD-induced vision and Sons of Anarchy reruns. Jesus. This new man staring at me from behind the desk is almost hard to look at, because my mother insisted we all attend church on Easter Sunday and Mother's Day, if no other days of the year. I know the story of Moses having to hide himself from gazing directly at God's glory, or else be killed. That's the dilemma I find myself facing. I never thought dying from lack of oxygen to the brain due to deadly hotness was a thing. But apparently, my bachelor's and master's and the Bible didn't cover everything." Dark, almost black hair shaved close on the sides and longish on the top, is slicked back from a face that is a little too sharp, a little too mean, and way too beautiful. His cheekbones, nose, and jaw are made up of cutting angles edging just shy of harsh. Not even the half-past 5 o'clock shadow covering his jaw can hide its marble-hewn lines, as if apologizing for the severity of his bone structure. His mouth is a creation of soft lushness. And his eyes? Blazing blue like the heart of the hottest flame. This is upstate New York in September, but his skin holds a golden tan that probably has more to do with genetics than a bed under ultraviolet lamps. If a lumberjack is wide and huge like, well, a lumberjack, then this man, equally as tall, if not beating him by a couple of inches with almost the same shoulder span, is cut like a swimmer. No, my eyes jerk back to his bright, unwavering gaze. A wolf. A lean, menacing, but gorgeous wolf whose pelt you want to dig your fingers in and rub your face all over and run away from at the same time. And the tattoos. Good God. They swirl over almost every inch of him. His neck, his strong corded forearms that aren't hidden by a black Henley, his hands, and if I'm not mistaken, even one side of his shaved head under the short hair almost hiding it. I can take her. His words ricochet against the walls of my skull, and suddenly they sound so much more salacious, dirty. Like a filthy promise instead of a kind offer. I should feel all shades of shame for even considering the softness of his mouth or if he offers filthy promises or not. Even with the scruff, the large frame, and piercing stare, he's young. Too young for me to have these kinds of thoughts about him anyway. Yet, my mind persists in wondering how those big, inked hands will look against my bare, unblemished skin. He arches a dark eyebrow, and a low snort from Lumberjack yanks me out of my plunge into that community pool of lust. Fuck. Where's the lifeguard to drag your ass out when you need one? I clear my throat and act like I wasn't just standing there ogling him like the last forkful of banana pudding. Yes, thank you. I don't want to put you out, but if you could fit me in, I would appreciate it. He nods, then almost dismissing me, he turns to the supermodel. Take her info, and I'll go get set up. Sure thing. The other woman smiles at me and motions me over. You're in luck. Dean's usually booked months in advance and rarely takes walk-ins. He's one of the best artists in the shop.
I'm standing right here.
Lumberjack rumbles as I stride past him to the desk. She rolls her eyes, taking my license as I read the consent and release disclosure and sign it. Seconds later, she takes the form, makes a copy of it, and hands it back. Your name's Nikki? Mine too. She smiles and stretches her hand out to me. Nicole Miller. Nice to meet you, Nikki Barber. You too. I return, shaking her hand. I don't bother to correct her about having the same name. Everyone assumes mine is short for Nicole, but it isn't. My legal name is Nikki because my mother loved the song Darling Nikki by Prince. Yep, she named me after a sex fiend masturbating in a hotel lobby. If that doesn't sum up the nature of our relationship, I don't know what does. Let me show you back. She strides from behind the desk and I follow her past a wall into a corridor. She turns left into a wide open layout bisected by cubicles. There's six of them, and she leads me to the one at the far end of the room, pausing at the one on the left. Here you go. Good luck with your tattoo. She sticks her head around the corner of the opening. Unless you need anything else, I'm out of here, Dean.
You're good. I'll lock up after we're finished.
He appears in the entrance, giving Nicole a one-armed hug. Again. Nice meeting you, Nikki. With that, she takes off, leaving me alone with... Dean, is it? I move forward the short distance still separating us. I guess I'd better get comfortable being near him. Very shortly, he's going to have his hands on my body. Heat licks at my belly and I fight not to squirm, but my gaze still drops to the aforementioned hands. Big, like the rest of him. With long, elegant fingers, and artist fingers. They look like they could be gentle, soothing, and then demanding. Rough. My sex clenches at the thought of experiencing both, because something tells me he would be a master at either soft or hard. Cajoling and commanding. Sweet and raw.
Dragging in a breath, I return my attention to his face and find myself locked in a visual showdown that ratchets the furnace inside of me from contained campfire level to Nero playing on his fiddle let the shit burn level. Unable to meet that intense blue gaze anymore, I duck my head like a coward and pretend that folding the disclaimer and shoving it in my purse is the most important task of the night. But Jesus, if I'm this turned on by just the sight of him, what the hell am I going to do when he actually touches me? Maybe the needle on the tattoo machine will switch off this. Oh, fuck. The needle. Question. I cough, squinting up at him. Just how bad is this going to hurt? I might have a tiny fair of needles. And by tiny, I mean the nurses having to bring in the straps and cuffs to vaccinate me when I was a kid. On the scale of 1 to 10, 1 being nothing to see here and 10 being knock me out to get it done, he crosses his thick arms over his chest. Don't you look, damn it. Don't look at those tendons and muscles flexing under all that inked skin. Are you a virgin? I blink. Blink again. Excuse me? I don't see what my sex life has to do with getting a tattoo. A tattoo virgin. He clarifies, his eyebrows arching. I'm guessing you've never had a tattoo before. Warmth that has zero to do with his hotness prickles my skin and races up my throat and pours into my cheeks. Right, I say, pushing a hand through my curls. I should have guessed that. Sorry. I'm a little nervous. Because of the needles. He nods, studying me with a scrutiny that seems to peer beneath flesh and bone, to every secret wish and need, locked up tight from prying eyes and unworthy people. Come on in. Nikki, right? Yes. I follow him into this surprisingly spacious cubicle. I've worked in enough of them when I put myself through college to notice that someone actually put care into the design of it. The walls stand at least 6 feet, and though he towers over the top by a few more inches, it's the perfect height to provide privacy for most people. A rod stretches over the opening, and a black curtain is swept to the side to ensure even more concealment if needed. There's a small table with a computer monitor, keyboard, and printer set up in a corner, a drafting board like architects use, and a red steel large piece of furniture that resembles a dresser with its drawers and flat tops. The rest of the space is taken up by what looks like a barber's chair and several pieces of folded up furniture against the walls. It's neat and would almost be sterile if not for the framed art lining the walls. Drawings and even a couple of photographs of vivid Chinese dragons and koi fish, flowers, ships crashing onto rocks, even a mural of the X-Men that appears to be inked onto someone's back. Interesting choice. They're all beautiful. Exquisite, even. And though I can't explain how I know, I'd bet the last $20 that my mother left in my checking account that they are all his. Have a seat. He waves toward the chair and drags over a stool facing me. With his height, our knees are on the same level, almost bumping. To answer your question, it depends on the person and their pain level. Most people find it tolerable. And nothing to cry over. Some even find it pleasurable. My face must reflect the, what the fuck, reverberating in my head, because he shrugs a wide shoulder. Like I said, it depends on the person. Also, where are you thinking of getting it? Some areas are more sensitive than others. I wanted it low on my left shoulder. I twisted to pat the area, giving him a more accurate idea of the location. That shouldn't be too bad. Now, he leans forward, propping his elbows on his thighs and bringing him a little closer to me. Are you going to go through with this? Or do you chunk it up to having a wild idea and walking away? I frown, a little offended. What makes you think I'm having a wild idea? Well, I am, but I've thought about it, made up my mind about it. He scans my cardigan, tank, and jeans, and without words accuses me of being, what, too old? Too pathetic? Too weak? I'm projecting on that last one, but the knowledge doesn't stop the anger from simmering inside my chest. What? Are you trying to tell me that women my age don't come in for tattoos? I snap. Nothing to do with age. He murmurs. I don't know how old you are, since I didn't look at your license. But women of all ages come in here. That's not what I meant. When you busted up in here, you looked like you were forcing yourself to. That any minute, you could just as easily turn around, walk out, and not come back. That doesn't say certainty about what you want. Maybe pride or stubbornness is putting you in this chair, rather than a desire for a tattoo. And that's not reason to be here, permanently modifying your body. Had I thought he was too young? He can't be more than 24, 6 years my junior. But he possesses an insightfulness that was amazing. And unsettling. He needs to be a young, hot artist who makes my body tingle in places that have lain dormant for so long, they're probably atrophied. I don't need for him to make me curious. Curiosity is a slippery slope that leads to a longing to discover more about him. When I leave here, I'll never see him again. We'll forget him. Curiosity would prevent that. I'm sure, I say, voice flat and brooking no argument. At least that's how it works with my students. And though he arches an eyebrow, he doesn't argue. Relief flows through me. Do you interrogate all of your clients like this? No, only the ones wearing baby blue sweaters, diamond earrings her man probably spent a mortgage payment on, has gorgeous curls and a fear of needles. I stare at him. Maybe gape. Did he just call me spoiled and complimented my hair in the same sentence? He can't be flirting with me. Tatted bad boys don't go for older, boring college professors. And everything about him screams bad. For me. Usually, I go for men like Dr. Chris Russell, who I met at the faculty mixer days ago. Older than me, job that involves numbers or books, wears khakis or dark slacks, button-down shirts with bow ties, has a 401k, and is definitely ink-free. Adrenaline over the tattoo must be having my imagination working overtime. Okay, do you have any idea what you want? He asks, that firm voice all business again. Business-like or not, that's a loaded question if I ever heard one. Yes, a woodpecker. A woodpecker. He repeats slower. Like Woody. I frown. Well, I guess, but less cartoony and mean. He studies me with that unnerving, all-too-seeing gaze for several long moments before he rolls the stool over to the computer and the drafting table. The next 20 minutes are spent in silence as he works over his tablet. Finally, he finishes and crosses over to me in three long strides. Is this something like what you wanted? He hands me the thin tablet, and I stare down at the screen. No, it's not what I envisioned. It's better. My heart pounds in my chest. From the bright red crest to the black and white streaked head and flecks of red near the beak, onto the black and brown molted body and feet, the drawing is gorgeous. Even the bark of the tree it clings to is so lifelike. I lift a hand to touch it before I can stop myself. I'm half expecting to feel the rough, knobby texture and the silken feathers and fragile bones of the bird. Odd, I raise my gaze to his. It's beautiful, I breathe. Tears sting my eyes, and I duck my head, batting my lashes to hold the betraying, silly moisture back. I love it. Thank you. You're welcome, he says softly, almost gently. And I stiffen because surely I imagined the brush of fingers over my hair. Yes, it was most likely the air from the AC system. I'll get this printed and have it on you. Take off your sweater, and you'll probably need to lower your strap and push the top down a little.
My belly executes a nervous stop, drop, and roll. He doesn't wait for my agreement, but turns away toward the scanner and printer. I just stare at his back, speechless. Stripping in front of him, even if it is just my sweater and a strap, I swallow, trying to moisten my suddenly parched mouth and throat. My pulse dances at my neck and wrist, and my skin prickles as if every follicle and cell is standing at attention, impatiently waiting for the instant when his big artist hands touch me. Is this a good size? He turns back to me with the transfer paper and pauses, frowns. What's wrong? You okay? Yes, I'm fine. I hurriedly remove my sweater and shrug out of the left strap. And that size is perfect. To avoid his scrutiny, I twist in the chair, presenting my shoulder and back to him. Water hits my back, and then he's touching me. I shiver, and no way he could have missed it. Please, God, let him chalk it up to being cold. Look who my mother is. I think you kind of owe me one. I don't know if my prayer is heard, but Dean doesn't comment on the full-body quake I just gave, so I'll take it. Because for the love of all that's Hail Mary worthy, he's just smoothed his palm over me, and my sex clenches so hard, I'll probably be bruised down there. I hold my cardigan up over my breast. If he catches sight of the beaded nipples that are no doubt protruding through my bra and shirt like spikes, my humiliation would be complete. Fuck humiliation, my nipples yell. We want some of that. Oh, for fuck's sake. Slowly, he peels the transparent from my skin, and even that's a sensory caress. Take a look in the mirror over there. Careful to keep a grip on my sweater, I shove off the elevated chair and cross to the mirror hanging on the far wall. Turning, I inspect the outline on my lower shoulder blade and upper back. It's medium-sized, but if I needed to cover it for work, I wouldn't have any problems. Perfect. I return to the chair, but he's lugging one of the folded-up pieces of furniture over, and in minutes, he has it erected to form a long black cushion table/bed/OBGYN chair. I refuse to think of stirrups. Come on over here. He pats the cushion. When I eye it, not even attempting to hide my skepticism, the corner of his mouth quirks. The first smile I've seen on him, even if it's a not-quite smile, and I quickly glance away from it. If his lips look full before, that's like curl made them positively edible. Trust me, I've had a 400-pound biker whose beard added another 15 stretched out on this. It can support your tiny frame. Tiny? I snort. When you're 6'3 or 6'4, I suppose my 5 feet 4 inches may seem small, but with my full C cup, hips for days, ass and thick thighs, I've never been called petite or tiny. I need you to lie on your stomach. I got you. Dean murmurs, cupping my hips and helping me to turn and shift so I'm positioned as he needs me. With a professionalism that isn't lost on me and is much appreciated, he gently tugs down the back of my tank top until more of my back is exposed to him. I must be flashing him a fair amount of side boob, but to give him credit, he doesn't seem to notice, and I can't decide if I'm relieved or disappointed over that. He spins around to his station to gather ink and small caps, but my skin is branded by his palm prints. Part of me wants to reach down and scrub at my hips, try to erase the phantom pressure of him cradling me. But the other, needier, darker part hungers to cover it, press it harder, deeper into my skin. Savor that branding for as long as I can. Ready? He rumbles from beside me. My nerves are tap dancing like they're auditioning for Gregory Hines. The buzz from the tattoo machine fills my ears. And I tense. But Dean doesn't make me wait, doesn't allow my fear of the unknown to escalate until I'm paralyzed. Settling one hand on the middle of my back,
He bends over me and puts the needle to my skin. In pure reflex, I flinch, but he murmurs, "Easy," and doesn't stop with the first line, which is good. His calm clears the voice inside my head, screaming, "Needle! Abort! Abort!" And I concentrate on what he's doing to me. It's not painful. And if I didn't know those instruments of torture were what transferred and embedded the ink into my skin, I would have assumed it was a really sharp pin dragging across my skin. That's what it feels like. It's a steady, grating sting, but nothing unbearable. I exhale the breath I hadn't been aware of holding and slowly relax. "Okay, this isn't too bad." "You good?" he asks, pausing to lean over and study my face. I nod, and he returns to my back. This time, when the buzzing starts, I don't jump, and my body doesn't turn into a slab of marble. "And Woody wasn't mean. He just didn't take anyone's shit. Remember that episode where he went to the bougiest hell restaurant and the maitre d' refused to serve him because he wasn't anybody important? Woody refused to take that line down, so he dressed up as some princess and damn near broke them, eating them out of their food. He did tear up the restaurant at the end, though." He snorted while I marveled at his random and startling knowledge about cartoons. "See, there's a difference between fucking someone over and doling out what they have coming to them." I don't reply, but his last words strike a place so deep inside me. I vibrate with it. "There's a difference between fucking someone over and doling out what they have coming to them." How he encapsulates my life in that simple sentence. "So, why the woodpecker?" he presses. Initially, I remain silent. My reasons are my own, and not ones I want to share, especially since they have to do with my mother and family, with my own cowardice. But as if he's a bartender, and the tattoo gun is a shot of scotch, my lips part of their own accord, and I'm confessing. One morning, a few weeks ago, I should have been at work, but I couldn't drag myself out of my bed. I stared at the far wall, much like I did that morning when all I wanted to do was curl up beneath the covers and never emerge from them. I was in a dark place. Then I noticed this constant, insistent knocking. At first, I thought maybe someone was at the door, but it was coming from the side of the house near my bedroom window. A woodpecker. It continued for at least a half hour. Unrelenting. As if it were telling me to wake the fuck up, to get my ass out of the bed and get on with the business of living. I laugh, and it's small and self-deprecating, because hell, I know how I sound, but Dean doesn't take the opportunity to join in and tease me. Instead, he straightens on the stool, shuts the machine down, and stares at me. There's no condemnation in those beautiful eyes. No, his gaze holds nothing but understanding. I shift my attention back to the wall, not ready to see that, not sure if I even want it. Anyway, I did get my ass out of the bed, and I accepted a job offer out here that I'd applied for on a whim. Then, I packed up and moved hours away to start over. But not before I turned my mother in to the police for identity theft. That information I managed to keep to myself. "And then you walked in here for a tattoo to commemorate it," he says. "That's some ballsy shit, Woody." I blink, then snicker at the nickname. He means it as a compliment, and I take it that way. With a slight smile curling the corner of his mouth, he returns to his work. For the next few minutes, silence reigns as I run over our conversation since that "I'll take her" through my head. "I bought them myself," I murmur, the words escaping me without my permission. He glances up at me, lifting the gun from my skin. Aunt, the earrings. I unfold an arm from under my head and tap one of the diamond studs. A man didn't buy them for me. I did, as a present to myself after I graduated college. Why it was important for him to know that, I can't say, which seems to be the theme of the night. Not that you need one to give you gifts. And I think it's badass and sexy as fuck that you can do it for yourself. But you don't have a man to do that for you? Badass? Sexy as fuck? Okay, there's no mistake in that compliment. And even though it's most likely the kind of throwaway thing a man his age, who looks like him, casually tosses out to women, my heart thuds against my chest like an anvil striking steel, and it echoes in my sex, my clit. Desire slides through my veins, heavy and thick, like the sweetest, warmest molasses. I fight the urge to squirm, to both increase and alleviate the swelling between my legs, created by just that piercing gaze and his words. No, I say, shocked at how even my voice is, but so damn happy. How humiliating would it be if he realized this woman old enough to have babysat him was having hot flashes over him? Well, not right now. What the fuck's wrong with the men where you lived? Or are they blind and dickless? I wait for him to return to the tattoo before softly saying, not all of them are bad. Yes. I dated a few assholes, but there'd been a couple who'd been good men. I hadn't blamed them for calling it quits when they couldn't put up with my family constantly hitting them up for money or stealing it when they didn't agree. How would Dean handle them? My mother? He might be young, but somehow I can't see him standing for their behavior. We both fall silent. And the lull of the buzzing tattoo machine and the constant drag of it over my skin draws me into the subspace where only my body, his hands, and the beasting pain exist. Closing my eyes, I fall under the seduction of it, craving the slight strokes and tugs on my back, the pain that's riding the edge of pleasure. A low but aching throb sets up shop in my lower stomach, and farther down still, in my sex. My breasts grow heavier, and lying on them, the nipples taut and sensitive against the black padding intensifies the pressure, and my teeth sink into my bottom lip. Keep still, Dean murmurs, wiping a paper towel across my skin. Only a little longer. I nod, but God. My body has turned into one big tuning fork, and he is the sole frequency I'm attuned to. I struggle not to quiver, to shake with the need zipping through me like tiny electrical currents. He'd warned me about some people deriving pleasure from getting tattooed, and I hadn't believed him. Now, I do. Yet it's not the pleasure/pain of the needle or the almost mesmerizing drone of the gun, or even the subtly commanding way he directs my body. It's him.
Hey, lady listeners, we're back. That was a good long first chapter. I'm sure you... The best thing about that for me was that you really get a sense of who these characters are and you know them. Like, you've, I mean, you haven't been in the hero's point of view yet, but I just love that. I feel like I really knew that heroine, like, to her soul by the time that chapter was over. So yeah, you can pre-order this book. I think she's probably going to have some bonus material. I'm going to put her on the spot, but yeah, you can pre-order Grading Curves in ebook right now. I'll put that link in the comments along with all the other book links that we talked about today, which was quite a few. Oh, Halfway Girl's out today in ebook.
It's 99 cents and in Kindle Unlimited.
Thank you, Mel. Good looking out. Yeah, if you guys listen to Halfway Girl on the podcast.
Do you have bonus material?
There is bonus material, yes, quite a bit. And it's really good. I mean, if I do say so myself, it's some good bonus material. Naomi Simone also has Sin and Ink series. Sorry, no, it's not the Sin and Ink series. It's the Sweetest Taboo series. The first book is Sin and Ink, and that is an MMA fighter who's in love with his dead brother's wife. Hot. The next book in that series, Passion and Ink, is a stepbrother book. These books are so good. The covers are super hot. So definitely click those. Her Lick series is in a box set right now for 99 cents. There's 3 books. You can grab that up. And she's doing a signed set of WAGS series books, which is Wife and Girlfriends. If you don't know, it's those are like the wives of sports heroes, and it's a sports series. So she's giving away a signed set of those books. Yeah, and a CD audiobook of Sin and Ink, because she's awesome. So, okay, I think that's it for today. We'll be back tomorrow with more grading curves from Naima Simone. And Leah's kind of staticky right now, but she's going to tell you what to do.
Fuck your day up. Make say your bitch. Don't be a dick.
Bye.
Bye. Read me romance. Read me romance. Read me romance. Read me romance. You could take a look in a book, that's fine. Or you could sit back, read.